From the Center for the Study and Teaching of Writing at The Ohio State University, this is Writer's Talk. I'm Doug Dangler. Rick Reilly has been voted National Sports Writer of the Year 11 times, the last in 2006. He wrote the back page of Sports Illustrated for over 20 years before becoming columnist for ESPN.com. He started the anti-malaria campaign Nothing But Nets and co-wrote the George Clooney football movie Leatherheads. Welcome to Writer's Talk, Rick Reilly.
What are these noises I'm hearing?
These noises, we'll get to that, because your book, your new book that you have here comes Sports from Hell.
But I'm hearing noises from behind you.
Right.
Did you have an odd lunch?
I had. I'm sorry. It's my fault. But you write in this. This is you go for 11 of the world's dumbest sports, right?
13. Yes.
I'm close. Okay. That's an average.
Yes.
So you go out, you do all these. You've got bull poker, 3-mile golf hole, rock,
that's
paper,
one
scissors.
Hole that it takes, it's 3 miles from start to finish, and the hole's 50 feet wide.
And you go down a mountain.
You do. It's very hard to three-putt because it's 50 feet wide.
Right. Well, you know, you're a man that loves a challenge. I admire that.
I scored a 19 on it, and it took me 5 hours and 32 minutes. And I figured over 18 holes, it would take something like 6 days and 14 hours, and I would score 342 or one round with Charles Barkley.
Oh, right. And you've worked with Charles Barkley, so we'll also get to that.
I did write a book with him once.
Right, The Wit and Wisdom.
Which he didn't read.
Well, he didn't have to. He wrote it.
Yeah, right.
So he didn't have to. Tell me, the book's cover shows you participating in a sport called ferret legging.
That's true. That is the moment the first ferret went into the sweatpants. Those are not my sweatpants. They make you take off your pants and your underwear. Mm-hmm. And then they put on these things, and then they make you tuck in the cuffs of your pants, and then they drop a live ferret down there.
Okay, and then you describe it as a not unpleasant event.
My ferret was tender and loving.
Okay, so others were eaten alive.
Were
eaten. You describe them as the land sharks.
Yes, ferrets aren't even allowed as pets in California and Hawaii.
No,
they are the piranhas of land.
That is awful. So I took the liberty of bringing a ferret into the studio today.
Oh, no.
And I was hoping you wouldn't mind demonstrating this. Because you've done this before, and
all
as
right.
a participatory journalist.
Oh, my God.
Right. So I brought a ferret. And that's the ferret and the tape.
Lord. Tape. Well, what are those noises?
Those are the noises coming from the tape.
That is hilarious.
But I wanted you to you know, think about whether or not you really want to participate, you really want to tell the kids
I
today.
I would have done it just for you guys, but I mean, I was starting to get a facial tick again from having to do this again.
Well, this one's a nice ferret, but the ferrets that you worked with.
But wait a minute, where did you get the sounds of the ferret? You can't just download that on iTunes.
No, you have to go online and do a very difficult, time-consuming search under ferret noises or
well,
ferret
they
sounds.
They were very convincing. I thought maybe you'd had a burrito.
No.
I wasn't sure.
No, I did not. I did this, and we went out. We got a ferret just so. But
you did have me. I thought you had a ferret in there.
I'm pleased that this worked. But your
what is
reaction
wrong with you people here?
Your reaction suggests to me that the ferret legging left some scars, some psychological psychological
only
scars.
Only because I've never been able to reconnoiter with my ferret. I had such a lovely time.
Right.
The winner, the all-time record holder in this was a guy that held it down for 5 hours and 32 minutes in Wales. And I think if you've had a rodent down your pants that long, you should be engaged.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or at least promised.
Well, you've got a description in here that you said you were interested in reading some of the ways that they bring the ferrets around.
Well, you have to go to Richmond, Virginia to do this. It's the only place in the country. Oh, there's a place in Alberta, Canada. But so these people are so into this, they have bios of the ferrets that are going down your pants.
Mm-hmm.
And so we said, well, could you send us some bios, you know, before I flew out there? And she did. I said, send the bios, since I make it a rule to know as much as possible about the things I'm putting down my pants. They came. Each bio arrived with a photo and a paragraph or two on the celebrity ferret. So here's an actual ferret bio she sent on a ferret named Pepe.
Mm.
Pepe was surrendered to the Richmond Ferret Rescue League approximately 6 months ago and is about 2 years old. He is white, crimson-eyed, male, who runs faster in reverse than forward. He is suspected to be deaf. But this doesn't slow him down. This is his first year participating in the ferret legging. So I write, the mind nearly blows a gasket at all the questions this one single paragraph sends ricocheting around the noggin. For instance, what does that mean, surrendered? Was Pepe involved in some kind of police ferret standoff? And why is Pepe only suspected of being deaf? Couldn't you simply smash two cymbals next to his ears and see if Pepe jumps? Or is the fear of that reaction exactly why he's still only suspected? Remember, these are meat eaters.
I know myself, when I look at this, I'm terrified of the meat eater potential.
It's terrifying.
The meat eater potential behind the ferret.
And my God, if Pepe really is deaf and he is my ferret and he's a meat eater, does that mean he can't hear my screaming? And why, for the love of Jesus, does he go faster backwards? What kind of hideous hell beast is this? And crimson eyes? Whose ferret was it? Charles Manson's?
Is that the one that's on the cover with you? That's not
no,
Pepe.
That's Spaz.
That's Spaz.
Spaz right. is not at all like Pepe.
Oh, okay. Well, good. Because Spaz is just calm.
Do not speak harshly of Spaz.
Spaz. All right.
Spaz climbed up inside the cloth of the sweatpants and was nuzzling things.
Right. Yeah.
Yes, it was lovely.
We won't go into any further than that. But he fell asleep. So
yes.
All right. So now we've covered ferret legging and some of the other sports that are in here. The surprise sport, I think, for most people, are that you call out baseball. You say baseball is one of the world's dumbest sports.
Well, my favorite thing of the whole book is to be able to say, you know, World Sauna Championship, ferret legging, chess boxing, baseball.
Mm-hmm.
Because so many things about baseball are dumb. For instance, why are you putting 65-year-old men who are 50 pounds overweight in a uniform? Why is A-Rod going to get a baseball thrown at his head simply because he accidentally walked across the mound? Why must Derek Jeter take 30 seconds between pitches when he hasn't even swung the bat to readjust his gloves, his hat, his cup? Why? Why must there be a seventh inning stretch? Why? Because it's so boring. It's that boring that people get sleepy and need a stretch.
There are no other sports, I think you point out, that have a seventh inning stretch.
I've never been to a Cleveland Browns game and needed to stretch. Have you?
I have never been to a Cleveland Browns game.
Well, they lose a lot, but at least it's exciting.
Exciting loss. Okay.
Oh, what other sports knows that 40 to 50% of their players have taken human growth hormone and yet don't test for human growth hormone?
Okay.
When there are tests now.
Yeah. All right.
That's dumb.
It is a big question. Did none of these sports then test for human growth? I mean, all of these sports, ferret legging tests.
There's doping in these sports, but it's just the dopes who do them.
Okay, all right.
For instance, chess boxing. Mm-hmm. It's just dopey.
So that's where they play chess for a few minutes, then they go box, and then they come back and play chess.
They box for 3 minutes, play chess. They have to. Someone rips off their right hand glove. Mm-hmm. Then they play chess for 4 minutes, speed chess, you know. Mm-hmm. Then back to the boxing, back to the chess until like the fifth or sixth round. They're bleeding on the board. They can't see.
I heard it's a waterproof board.
Some they should be. And some guys are like moving the queens two up and one over. They've lost their minds. Mm-hmm. It's a dumb sport. But they think, and one of our rules is you couldn't know it was dumb. The people who are in it think it's really quite important. Mm-hmm. But they think it's really going to catch on,
and jarts,
which it isn't.
The other one I liked was jarts, because I remember jarts from my childhood. I don't think they'd been outlawed, or at least we still had a set.
What year is this?
This is 2010.
No. No.
I don't know.
What year was your childhood?
My childhood. It wasn't 1 year. No, it was the late 70s.
Okay, so they're banned in 1986.
Okay.
You cannot manufacture them. You should not own them.
Right. So I remember, well, I didn't, they didn't, hadn't been banned at that point.
People know what we're talking about, right? Lawn darts.
Darts, yeah, the metal lawn darts. They
often
come down.
A brother would throw them over the house and go through a sister's head.
Yeah, so
it caused 6,100 injuries in 8 years and a few deaths. One guy was murdered with lawn darts.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
He was attacked by lawn darts.
So as an author,
he was essentially one of those sprinklers with too many holes.
So as an author, you're doing the research on this, and you're saying, I'm going to find out about jarts. And at what point don't you think, man, I shouldn't get involved in this? This is a crazy sport. Well, I mean, all of these are crazy. Bull poker you didn't participate in.
Well, this one is just illegal. I mean, the only thing, maybe the FBI could come. In fact, the guys who do it up in Piqua, Ohio, mm-hmm. near Dayton, were terrified that I was an FBI guy. And they checked me out. I'm like, well, I'm kind of known. All you got to do is check me out. But they took us 6 months to get them to agree to let us come to their secret Jarts illegal tournament.
Mm-hmm. And you made it out with no injuries, but someone traveling with you sustained an injury.
My researcher was stuck in the ankle with a lawn dart. And because she wasn't in the tournament, she didn't sign the waiver, so I could sue these people for like their entire lawn dart fortune.
Collection, right. I have to let you know that when I told people about this and I was showing them some of these, at least one person said, oh, I love Jarts. I still have a set. And I said, you're breaking the law.
Here we
are in the State House. The collection is not in the State House. The collection is somewhere else. But somebody that I work with said that. And I was.
You have something on them now because it's very illegal. In fact, if that person were to put their set of Jarts up on eBay, eBay would take it down within 24 hours. Mm-hmm. But these people quickly send them a missive saying, we'll buy your Jarts for $30. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you'll probably be arrested.
Mm-hmm. And there's something wrong with just hard plastic lawn darts. Is it the design of it? I know these are metal.
They have pins on them to make them go even faster into your skull. They have metal, long metal points. They were originally called this, and people at home might not know this, outdoor lawn missiles. It is a kid's game, it said right on the box.
when you're researching something like this, as I said, what do you at some point say, I get it why you're doing it, but you've already got one person injured. Are you running away from these things in the future? Participatory journalism.
No, having I'm doing, such... this July I'm doing the running of the bulls in Pamplona, Spain. And I am. I like this kind of stuff. The most dangerous to me was the World Sauna Championship.
Right.
I mean, I was with a guy, and we had to take him to the hospital because he came out after 7 minutes at 261 degrees, mind you. That's basically a pizza oven on mercury, right? So he's got all his skin missing from right here. And I said, did you breathe through your nose in there? And he said, yeah, I thought you were supposed to. He said, dude, all your skin is gone. So we started looking at his body, and he looked like a chicken that somebody had left on the George Foreman grill and forgot about. It was all boiled up, and we had to take him to the hospital there in Finland, and he was in the hospital for hours and hours getting second skin put on his body. Mm. It was dangerous.
That is. It's even worse than the 3-mile golf hole falling down the mountains. I mean, all of these seem to involve... and then the drinking games with the projectile vomit, they all seem to involve some way of injuring yourself for pleasure.
Well, the projectile vomiting games are just gross.
Right.
Like these guys can say, oh, cameraman, left ear, 10 feet away, whack, and they get him. And worse than that, before they drink all their beer, they drink a lot of food coloring, food sprinkles, peanut butter, so that it's not only colorful, but sticks.
Mm. So let's just...
Is this the very bottom this program's ever gone to?
It may be. They'll tell me whether they air it. We'll find out. So let's move to the transition. You started out as a print journalist.
Right? Yes.
Good transition there, right?
Yeah,
away from... So you transitioned from being a print journalist, serious print journalist, right?
Yes.
Writing about sports to television, ESPN's Homecoming, focusing on a personality and...
A life.
How does that change you as a journalist? What does that do for you?
What I used to just have was my pen and my pad and my brain, and that was all I needed. Now, I go to do a story, I got to bring a cameraman, sometimes two. Like, we just watched a game with George Karl, the Nuggets coach, in his living room while his team lost because he's fighting cancer. So I got to go into his house. Used to be just me and my pad. Now it's two cameras, a sound guy, a producer, a director. That's six people, and it's much more cumbersome and collaborative. On the other hand, it's kind of new and fun.
But doesn't that change what happens when you talk to people? Because they're not going to open up to you if you've got a bunch of cameramen here, like I'm asking you.
Totally.
To tell me about your pain.
But, right.
So how do you deal with that? How do you get to the heart of
a story?
It's
a trade-off because you reach so many more people, I think. I mean, SportsCenter is going to reach a lot of people. We did get to kind of a serious moment with him. He kind of forgot the cameras, and he just got so sickened by what he was seeing from his team that he got up and left. He got up and left and walked out of the chair. He just couldn't stand it. And he warned us that he really has a hard time doing it. So, I get what you're saying. You lose some with the giant collaborative process. On the other hand, you gain things because you actually see it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How do you pick the guests? It seems like you've got a span of people. You've interviewed George.
On Homecoming?
Right.
It's a two-day ask. So, for instance, we're doing Donovan McNabb next in Chicago. And he needs to give us a day to show us around his hometown, his high school, where he first got kissed, whatever. And then the next day is the big show where we bring out his teammates and we examine his life from top to bottom. And usually he gets surprised. Sometimes they cry. It's cool. So, but you can't get a superstar to give you 2 days very often, mm-hmm. you know? Jack Nicklaus said no. And I know him really well. He just didn't have 2 days. So quite often they pick us.
Okay. So our current sports figures are harder than those who are retired, for example, and or have slowed down.
I don't know. I got Donovan McNabb, Dwayne Wade, Josh Hamilton. We got a lot of current. Michael Phelps did it. Mm-hmm. Can't get Jack Nicklaus. Yeah. You know, can't get Willie Mays.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't know what their schedule is like.
Speaking of Michael Phelps, is it true that he gave you the laser suit to wear? You did swimming with him wearing a laser suit. Was this, in fact, two sizes too small?
It was.
And he thought that it was just a joke.
Much like your ferret joke, I didn't realize I was being had.
Okay.
And it was two sizes too small. And sadly, some of the crew saw my derriere because I was fighting with this thing.
Well, that's why we didn't bring the actual ferret, because we didn't want that happening again. Although you now know he was showing you the tricks of the trade, how to change under a towel and things like that.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Right.
It's a great point.
So I read on your website that you came up with the idea for the George Clooney movie Leatherheads.
Well, it was my writing buddy and I mm-hmm. came up with it together, and we were at SI.
Okay.
And it was based on the 1925 world of professional football, where some guys would play pro football and college under an assumed name. Hmm. They'd stop the train by pulling the emergency handle and then see a bunch of guys in a field and play them for money. They'd pass the helmet. They'd pull trick plays. So we wrote this movie. It sat in Hollywood for 17 years. George Clooney finally did it. He kind of wrecked it. But again, without Clooney... It doesn't get made, so, you know, you...
How did he kind of wreck it? As the writer, what was it that you say it kind of wrecked it?
He rewrote it.
Oh.
He rewrote it, and he took out some of the funny stuff, put in some very unfunny stuff, put in some pretty good stuff. Half of it was his, half of it was ours. But he also directed, which was very good. He can act. He's a wonderful guy. I just don't think he's a great writer.
Okay. Did you talk to him about that as a writer?
Just hell no. I'm on set, and you want me to tell the director and the star of the picture.
Before that, you didn't see the script.
I did see the script, and I said to my agent, it's no good. There's a lot of things that came out that he didn't get or that is going to slow the movie down. Mm-hmm. Let me fix this. And they said, absolutely not. You'll never work in Hollywood again.
Okay. Have you worked in Hollywood since then?
Yeah, we have a book I wrote called Missing Links.
Right, the golf.
Four guys who play the worst golf course in America. It's a fiction. Mm-hmm. And they make a bet to see who can play the course that borders them, which is the best one. You know, when the best one has a tournament, they park on the bad one. So they have this real jealousy and hatred of this other. So they make a bet. It changes their lives. So Steve Carell from The Office mm-hmm. bought it. So now, hopefully, that'll be a movie. But again, I don't get to write it.
You don't get to write it. So what's that like? Describe to me the feeling of an author and you're watching the work change or you get all the work coming. You said, you know, you don't like it. But does this sour you? It apparently doesn't sour you because...
Well, Kurt Vonnegut said, go to the California border, throw your book across, take the check, and don't even go into the state.
Okay.
Because you'll be sadly disappointed with what happens. but there are good... You know, there are good scripts. I mean, the Coen brothers write great scripts. I really feel like if he'd have given us a chance, we could have shown him how great it could be.
Okay.
On the other hand, without George Clooney, we got nothing.
Okay.
And he's a big star, got great hair, couldn't be nicer. So with Steve Carell, I'm letting it go. A guy who is writing it who wrote The Breakup with Jennifer Aniston and Vince Vaughn thought it was a very nice script. So I'm just trusting that he's going to do a good job. I'm going to the Nevada-California border, take my check, and run the other way.
Okay. So you're not going to, on Leatherheads, you were in some of the shooting. You were in one scene.
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah, but you're not going to do that on this one.
I might, but I will remove my heart from it.
Okay.
Because what's wrong with just a book? What's wrong with having written a great book like Missing Links, which is still in print, still doing great, and just isn't that enough? Why must the movie also be terrific, you know? I don't know. I'm asking you. Do you know?
I don't have a book, so I can't answer that. I'm just curious about, as a writer who's invested a lot into it, you know, the difficulty there must be watching somebody else change it. And
I'll tell you what it was
the
like.
Pleasure, the unexpected pleasure, perhaps.
It was like giving up your child at birth, getting to know them for maybe a year, giving them away, and seeing that child at 17, and you don't even recognize the child. Mm-hmm. Child's beautiful. Child's great. Child's happy. Child's carrying wads of money to give you. But it isn't the child you raised, you know? It's mm-hmm. much different.
Right. Is there a place I can have that done, by the way? I'm just...
yes.
So your website has a section called Share an Idea. And I was fascinated by this because
okay, yes.
you say, you quote, readers have provided a boatload of ideas and insights that have helped me with write about human joy, sorrow, religion, and politics
yeah.
as it weaves its way through sports. So once you get an idea from a user, from a surfer, how do you follow up on it? What happens there?
Well, first I read it, and 99 out of 100 suck. Right? Mm-hmm. It's all, I think you really need to write about my daughter Amber's soccer team. They're 18-3 and they try so hard. Like, that's an idea. That's not an idea. Now, if your daughter Amber's soccer team, every girl playing on it had one leg, now we got something, right? So say this team all had one leg. I would then find out if this is true, because a lot of people lie. Or this was a team that existed 20 years ago. Or only one girl has one leg and the rest are just fine. Whatever. I would check it. Oh, now it's real. Okay, now I run it by my editors. You like this? Is this good? Yeah, we think it's good. Now you go to Piqua, Ohio, or wherever you're going to go, and you spend a couple days with these people, and now you got to call them. But only one in 1,000 are that good.
So how many times have you thought, this is a really good idea, you check it out, you go down there, and you don't end up with a column? You end up with...
Go all the way to the city?
Yeah, you go all the way to Piqua, or do you have to have a column by the time you
Yeah, if you get on a plane, you got to know. I mean, I check it out, I send right. somebody there, you know, a guy I know, or whatever, is this real? But so often, these are stories that haven't been reported. Mm-hmm. You know, like we found a woman that lived next to Nassau Coliseum in Long Island, and she was blind, lived right next to the Hockey Coliseum, kept score of every game for 27 years, had never been to a game.
How did she keep score?
Braille. Listened to the radio and did it in Braille.
Mm-hmm.
How cool is that, right? So we took her to a game. And she never had the money, I don't know what, but to see her smell the coffee and feel the burr in the air, you know, and touch the players' faces, you know, and feel the shaved ice, it was totally memorable. And to get a story like that is, you know, hard.
Mm-hmm. Was that one you wrote about a column for, a print column, not a video column, or?
No, this was years ago. Sports Illustrated.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That's when you were writing the back page for Sports Illustrated, or
yeah,
just
right.
a general
back page.
Okay. How did you get into writing the back page? How did that come about?
10 years. So 1997 came along, and I had been writing the back page like every third or fourth week. Mm-hmm. With other guys, Jack McCallum, Lee Montville, Frank DeFord, whatever, George Plimpton. And I was just doing it a lot. And ESPN, the magazine, started. Mm-hmm. And they made a big run at me and said, why don't you come? And I said to SI, I'm going to leave unless you give me that back page every week.
Oh.
And they did.
Okay. All right.
So it was force.
All right. So tell me about, there's a story that's pretty prevalent right now about Dez Bryant and a question that he was asked. And you've written about this.
Yes.
And Dez Bryant was apologized to by Jeff Ireland, Miami Dolphins general manager, for a question that he asked him.
During the application, in other words, they're trying to decide, the Miami Dolphins, should they draft Dez Bryant, the great Oklahoma State wide receiver, mm-hmm. who had some troubled past, was always late, forgot his cleats once to a workout, that kind of stuff. And the guy asked him, is your mom really a prostitute? He says he asked it in reaction to Dez saying to him, my father was a pimp. Dez says the guy's lying.
Okay. My question about that is, as a journalist, you came out and said, you know, this was an inappropriate question.
Well, that was a violation of his civil rights, for one thing. And for a second thing, you're not drafting the mom. I mean, are we who raised us?
Mm-hmm.
Can't people overcome? I mean, James Brown, the great soul singer, grew up in a brothel. Mm-hmm. You know, Winston Churchill, his teacher, said the kid is always late and certainly on a path to failure. John Lennon, same thing. Richard Pryor's mom was a prostitute. Don't we rise above?
Right.
I don't see how the question is relevant, A. B, it says right in the Civil Rights Act, you cannot ask a job applicant about his parentage, nor his religion, nor his sexual practices, anything like that. You're not his age.
Okay.
So if I'm Des Bryant, I might sue.
My question on that one was, where do you draw the line? That's one obviously clear limit that you have as someone who's going to go and write about somebody. So you've got that list of things that you're not going to ask about. The question that I was interested in is, you also write about asking Pete Rose about betting, and he throws a shampoo bottle at you.
Right.
And, you know, I don't know how often that's happened, but, you know, what happens when you ask those questions? How far do you go? where do you draw the line on that? Because it's a legitimate question to ask Pete Rose.
Right.
You ducked the shampoo bottle the first time.
I did. But are you questioning my right to ask them as
no,
a journalist?
No.
I'm just curious where you will go with that. Where in the pursuit of a story it becomes a difficult, because
that's interesting.
The gray
so you're
areas.
Saying, would I ask Tiger, what did you do with the Applebee's waitress? That would be over the line, right?
And
it doesn't help my story any
right.
to know. There's just a line you know not to cross. But Pete Rose betting, when I had rumors that he would bet on baseball, so all I said was, how much do you lose at the track every year? And that's when he flipped out. Now, this was before all the betting on baseball actually came out, but I'd heard rumors. So I was trying to dig at something to see where the nerve is, you know?
Right, yeah.
And
that's my curiousness. Where how far do you dig?
When you catch that nerve, you know you got something.
Okay.
And I knew I had something. When I asked Sammy Sosa, hey, would you be willing, since you want to be the first guy tested for drugs, would you be willing to go down to this lab with me and take a steroid test and therefore set yourself apart from all these people are whispering about? You have said publicly you can't wait to be tested. Let's do it now. Let's not wait for the collective bargaining agreement. And he flipped out. And he just started yelling at me in Spanish, saying something about my padre, this and that, swearing, a big vein on his forehead. It looked like he was going to just pinch my head off.
Yeah.
That I knew I'd hit a nerve.
Yeah, but that would be my concern, because I'd be willing to ask these questions until I started feeling physically threatened.
You know?
That's where my line is.
Well, you know, a lot of journalism is putting your nose where it really could get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you gotta ask the hard question.
All right. One last question. Tell me, even when, what got you involved with the Nothing But Nets campaign? It's anti-malaria campaign. You purchase nets for people living in. How did you get involved in that?
Yeah, it's nothingbutnets.net, and we've raised $32 million now for this thing, which was just a column idea I had based on my daughter telling me that 3,000 kids a day, die in Africa from malaria. Mm-hmm. And there's no need for it, because all you need is to sleep under these nets, because this mosquito only comes out between midnight and 4 a.m. And I'm like, really? Just for lack of nets? How much are they? And she said, $10. And I said, well, sports fans would help with that. I mean, they love jumping over nets and cutting down nets and
kicking
New Jersey nets.
Yeah.
Okay. Girls in fish nets, whatever, surfing the net. So the column ran. I said, I made up this name, Nothing But Nets. And we got $1 million in the first week. $100,000 in the first week. And then United Nations Foundation took it over, and $32 million is 3.2 million nets. And I went there, and sometimes 3-4 kids will sleep under a net. So you're really saving lives, and it's just a no-brainer.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for being here today on Writer's Talk.
This is probably the weirdest Writer's Talk ever, wouldn't you say?
And we'll put that into the blender and find out what happens with it. From the Center for the Study and Teaching of Writing at The Ohio State University, this is Doug Dangler saying, keep writing.